from St. George's Reptile Hospital in Marathon, Florida. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred, hard-hitting discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your hosts, the oldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, self-taught reptile veterinarian, retired professional reptile rodeo clown, and one of the best-loved insurance agents in this room, Gregory J. Ringhausen. Also featuring the legal representative for the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, mentor to young attorneys, Renaissance man, and the eldest of the Ringhausen brothers, Richard J. Ringhausen. And lastest and leastest, the six-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion, winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, a man's man who can eat Spam right out of the can, the youngest of the Ringhausen brothers, and the star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen.
Yeah, you're making a big, like it's a big joke or something, but I love Spam right out of the can.
Hey, it's not bad. A little mustard.
I love it. I just eat it. Right,
just open it up. You don't even have to wash the slime off of it.
No, that's where the flavor is.
That's where all the good stuff. Throw that on the bread. You just eat it right out of the can, and you throw bread
with a plastic fork.
Really?
Or do you just kind of dump it out and then just pick it up and eat it whole?
What?
You know, I said, do you ever just dump it all out in one clump and then just pick it up and eat
just
it?
Just start biting off of it?
Yeah.
Chunks of it? Yeah. No. But our brother Brad throws it on the grill like that.
Oh, I'm sure that's good.
He'll grill.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with grilled Spam.
Whole chunk of this, one big chunk. Right on the grill.
How about that?
Right out of the can, onto the grill.
Awesome.
Now, our other brother, Dennis, likes to slice his Spam up, but you know how you can jam a fork into it and just start cutting, trying to cut evenly, you know.
Yeah.
Just he uses a cheese slicer and just cuts Spam with the cheese slicer.
There you go.
And gets a nice clean cut.
And they're all uniform. They're all the same thickness.
Well, they got a Spam cutter in here now. You don't even have to use, I mean, it's expensive, but I mean, it just.
How many?
Whoa. What do you call expensive?
$15.
For the pleasure of having evenly cut Spam, well worth it.
All right. I'm just saying it's in here. And
what other meat products can you just eat straight out of the can without having to cook them? Sardines. Well,
you don't even have to have the slice if you don't want to. Just grab it out of there and start eating on it.
Sardine's not a meat.
Can you eat a sardine? Of course a sardine is a meat.
It's a fish.
Yes, it is. I agree with Allie on that.
Well, you're splitting
protein.
Hairs now.
Teriyaki, bacon, maple, jalapeno. Hot spicy.
You're talking about Spam.
Yep. Teriyaki.
You ever eaten a sardine, Greg?
No.
I have.
Alan, you eaten a sardine?
Yes.
Yeah, wait, I take that back. I have to take that back. Yes, I have. A lot.
Was it disgusting?
No, is it mixed up in a salad or something? It was fine.
Between a couple of saltine crackers, man.
Even better.
Pull them straight out of the can.
Yeah. Pretty salty. Really not too bad.
Like Larry Clunk eating fish.
Right out of the tank.
No.
Yeah, saw him do it.
I mean, like, did he just grab it with a net or hand?
Like at a pet store.
Yeah.
At a pet store?
Yep. Need it.
It's been a while.
I'd like 3 goldfish, please. And just stood there and ate them.
Wow. Did the guy just look at him? Or did he know
look,
what?
Look, I'm not going to sell you anymore if you're going to do that.
Oh. He went through a phase where he thought he could swallow fish. About fishing with him.
Me and brother Dennis and Larry were fishing at this lake, and we were catching these little.
Now you weren't like just 7 years old.
Oh no, we were old enough to
drink.
We were old enough to make bad decisions. Yeah. And I think there may have been some drinking involved that particular day, but we were catching these little tiny fish, little big bluegills, and we were just catching them and throwing them back. And finally, Larry comes to the conclusion that he could just swallow one whole.
Live.
Alive. Bluegill. All right. Let's see it.
Of course you're going to stand there and dare him. Once he said that, you're going to dare him until he does
it. So anyway, he slides one in, you know, the fish going in head first. And as he's trying to swallow it, he starts gagging. You know, the gag reflex kicks in.
Oh, yeah.
And as he's like coughing and gagging, the bluegill, the fish, spreads its fins out. And they're like digging into his throat. So now he's really getting frantic. You know, he's like, get out, get out. Like, kind of panicky.
And now he's looking around for that friend in college who is a veterinarian.
Get out.
Exactly. Good one.
Get out.
And instead, he's got the Ringhausen brothers.
Well, there's
got
to be a pliers in here somewhere.
We root through the tackle box and find a pair of needle nose pliers.
There you go.
And start tugging on that fish. And I mean, it is embedded in there. Wow.
So when you say this, the tail of the fish is sticking out Larry's mouth, and you guys are.
Oh. Well, no, it wasn't sticking out of his mouth. It was back in there. We were taking a risk by going in with the pliers. You know, the fingers were susceptible to teeth. But finally, Dennis and I went off for a conference and decided that one quick jerk was the only way to go.
And let me tell you something. As soon as they picked up the pliers, there was a jerk and hit both ends. Nice.
You can't believe how much he bled from having that fish yanked out of his mouth. He wasn't a happy camper either after that.
Wow.
We got it out, though.
And lesson learned by you guys, right?
No vet necessary.
Wow. Yeah, Larry learned his lesson. I mean, it wasn't long after that we were at the package shed, convinced him to see how big of an apple he could put in his mouth.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. He put a big apple in his mouth. But the problem was he forced it, you know, like past his teeth to where it was in his, mouth cavity, but was stuck now behind his teeth where he couldn't swallow it. He couldn't, and he didn't have the pressure, the downward pressure to crush it or anything. And he couldn't get it out of his mouth. You know, he's like, can't get his fingers around behind it. He's you know, like getting kind of panicky and stuff. And
well, yes. Have you ever seen a horse that's run a really long race, how it's like snorting at the end?
Yeah. He's just like blowing snots coming out of his nose. He's young. He's sweating like a pig. You know, it was disturbing.
So
he's getting all red and stuff.
So the Ringhausen boys come to the rescue.
Oh, yeah.
Our idea was to get a butcher knife and we're going to cut the apple into pieces and he can spit it out. And he wasn't having any of us going into his mouth with a butcher knife. So finally I came up with the idea and I just hit him on the bottom of his jaw as hard as I could to smash the apple. You know, so I'm hitting him repeatedly and finally it works and he spit it out. That was a good show.
We need the guy in here.
Wow. Yeah, one of these days we'll have to get Larry in.
Wow.
We could relive that moment.
We'll bring some apples
except he'll hold you down and shove one in your mouth. How do you like
it? Hey, wait a minute. Let me put a little pressure on the bottom of your lips here.
Al and I brought you a bluegill to swallow.
How big was this bluegill?
Too big to swallow.
Well, yeah, I know. Okay.
And Larry was a big guy.
He is a huge guy.
What, six? What is Larry? 6'2"?
Something like that.
And several stones.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. He's above his fighting weight.
He would be what would be classified as a super heavyweight.
Cruiser weight. Isn't that what they call it?
I don't have no idea. I don't know.
Larry Moose Klunk.
Yes.
That was his nickname.
He could write a book.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
He was, you know, out in the area where we grew up, everybody had a nickname.
Well, I was just thinking about that today. Just thinking that everybody in the Fielden area has a nickname, or very close to it.
What was my nickname?
We don't want to tell you, Rick. We don't want to hear you cry.
You weren't from one of the nickname families. You had to be in a nickname family.
Well, you had the,
like the Gettins
and the Heitzigs. They all had nicknames.
Yeah, like when Dennis hung around with him, they gave him a nickname, didn't they?
Yes.
Radar.
They called him Radar.
Yeah. I can see why.
Anyway.
Did you ever get a nickname there, Allie?
Isn't Allie enough?
No. Garhead or something like that.
Well, in that little shit.
Well, that's a good one, too.
Ship.
Okay.
He was a dinghy.
He's pointing a finger.
You were a little dinghy.
He's ready to roll.
A few years ago, I went to Washington, D.C. with our parents, mom and dad, because they were invited out to meet with the congressman from their area as a veteran who was still producing a marketed agricultural product.
Dad, not the congressman.
That's right, dad, not the congressman. So it was decided that one of the four brothers would travel with mom and dad because neither of them had ever been on an airplane. Then escort them about Washington, D.C., go to this big banquet to meet with the congressman and go on tours of our nation's capital.
Oh, cool.
So I was the brother chosen to go along
now,
on this trip.
Real quick, since I wasn't in on the Family Four, how did you do this? Were you throwing dice or just drawing things out of a hat? Or
we fought for it. We fought for it.
Did you? That's pretty
Alan
cool.
Alan won. He's the wrestler.
Yeah, I got you.
So anyway, we go out there, and we're at this banquet, and this congressman comes up, and he's talking to mom and dad and I, and he's asking where we're from. And we said, well, we're from such and such county in Illinois. And he said, oh, okay, yeah. He said, this is Congressman Mike. And Congressman Mike says, oh, yeah, yeah. He said, I used to ran into some people from there. He said, they all had nicknames. Oh, these weird nicknames. Yeah, yeah, there's a bunch of them. He said, as a matter of fact, my family, and this is the congressman saying, had this company, and we were like a bus line.
Have you ever met this congressman?
Had I met him before that?
Yeah.
I had.
Huh. Hmm. He wasn't from here, though, was he?
He wasn't from the county we were in. He was from like three counties over.
Okay.
But his family, and this is before he was a congressman, his family owned a busing company, and they had contracted with this group from our home area to drive them from this area up to the Canadian border.
And uh-oh.
At the border, these guys from our area, with all the nicknames, were going to then fly into Canada on a fishing trip.
Ooh.
And this congressman, who was just a young guy at the time, was his job was to drive him to the border and then wait there, stay at this hotel
until they
and
got
then when
done.
They came back, they'd get back on the bus and he'd drive him back home. And when they found out that he was just staying at this hotel, this group of our friends, as it turns out, talked him into secretly getting on the charter flight with them and flying into Canada. And he said, and these guys all had these weird names. He said there was a guy named Round Man, and there was a guy named Tuffy, and there was a guy named Weasel. He said, and we were supposed to be going, I thought they were going on a fishing trip, but all they did was gamble and drink the whole time they were there. He said, which was kind of nice.
Good training for a congressman.
He said, and then I came back and told Dad that I had a good time at the hotel in the Michigan while waiting on these guys. And
wow.
Nobody ever knew.
And for those who don't know, Round Man, Tuffy, and Weasel are three people from Field in Illinois.
Three people from the same hometown that we were.
With the nicknames.
So in fact, I was talking to one of them's son, Weasel's son. And I told him that same story, related it to him, and texted him the story. And his text response was probably three other guys named Weasel, Round Man, and Tuffy that I don't know.
Trying to be.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. How do you get a name like. I get the Round Man, but how do you get a name like Weasel? I mean, Tuffy, I get. He's, you know, probably a tough guy on the playground, you know. But Weasel. What a weasel.
What do you do to deserve that one?
Yeah.
You weaselly little whatever.
There's one nickname, Pear.
Yeah, I don't get that one.
I don't either.
Don't know. Talk about driving to D.C.
How many times you do that?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Was it 16 hours?
Yeah, and I'd leave like 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning, and then drive till 10 at night in D.C.
When I was going to law school.
Pretty long day.
But one of the times I drove out, or was out there, Alan and Larry came out for a wedding. Which cousin got married? Lisa?
Lisa Ringhausen.
Yeah. Lisa Ringhausen got married, and it was down in Norfolk Naval Base.
Very cool.
And so Alan and Larry drove to Washington, D.C. and picked me
up. Her nickname was Squirrel.
So in Ringhausen has a nickname.
So they come pick me up, and we drive down to Norfolk, right? Yeah. And a couple things happen. Larry always wanted to go to the ocean.
Never seen the ocean.
All right. Good for Larry.
And we'll do that one first. Larry going to the ocean.
All kinds of fish there.
It's like November.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Atlantic Ocean, uh-huh. of course. Uh-huh. So Larry's never been to the ocean. We drive out to the beach in Norfolk, and Larry proceeds to strip to his boxer shorts and just walks out into the ocean until his head disappears. It's like he was going to walk to Europe. I was like, you know, me and Alan are standing there. Neither one of us can swim particularly good. Certainly not good enough to go drag Larry Clunk in. Yeah. If he drowns,
he starts suffering from shock, he's dead.
Like, who's going to go get him? Because he disappeared. He literally walked. And it wasn't that he dove in. He walked like that robot in Gilligan's Island that was going to walk back to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Just walked in and disappeared. And he came out a lot faster than he went in. Pretty soon, here his head pops up. He comes tearing back up the beach. Of course, he doesn't have a towel.
Wow.
There's no forethought that went into this at all. No. So he has to dry off with his clothes and then put them back on.
But just being around the three or four of you, there was not too much forethought in anything that really went on with you guys, was there?
No, I guess not. Yeah. So the other thing we decided was that we wanted to see an aircraft carrier. Because we'd never seen an aircraft.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And they're
enormous.
At that time,
yeah, they are
unbelievable.
Yeah.
At that time, Norfolk was the base for the Atlantic Fleet. So we drive to the Norfolk Naval Base, and we get to the gate. We're just kind of full of gas. We figure we'll just go until someone stops us. We get to the gate, and there's no one man in the gate.
Really?
So we just drove on to the base.
Drove right down to the aircraft carrier.
Their sign says carriers, so it's like, let's go down.
What?
So we're going to see them. Were there a few there?
There's sailors going up and down the ramp to this carrier that's tied off there. And we pull up right next to the edge of the ramp, like we're the admiral coming to take over the ship.
In a Pinto.
Parked there. And the three of us walk up on the ramp, walk around the flight deck of an aircraft carrier.
Did anybody ever stop you?
Well, yeah. At some point, some guy, can I help you, gentlemen? No, we just wanted to see.
We're just looking around.
We just wanted to see what an aircraft carrier looked like. We're thinking of buying it, but we're not sure.
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, you have to leave.
All right, Dimitri. Come on, let's go, Boris.
But they didn't escort us off the base. They just said, you've got to leave. So we walked down the ramp, got in the car, and drove off.
Nobody
stopped us.
Well, I
could have driven a truckload of dynamite up.
What year was this?
82.
Wow. Cool.
I'm guessing security's
a little more tight now, I do believe, yeah.
What's your name? Is that what you're wanting to do, Rick, is drive a truckload of dynamite down to a military base?
Absolutely not.
Just checking.
So our Uncle Bob, he was a captain in the Navy at the time, we tell him that story. He says, well, they should have stopped you at the gate. I said, well, they didn't.
They didn't.
We used your name.
Said, we're Bob Ringhausen's nephews. Back off. That's Captain Bob to you.
We were telling people that.
Well, I think we were back here.
The other thing I remember about driving to that, and we were not in my Pinto. We were in your little whatever that.
Oh, that little box, that Fiesta.
Fiesta. Because I remember driving that. And like missing my turn, and like you're like screeching into that subdivision,
like almost on two wheels.
Yeah, like roll the car over type thing.
Yeah,
like whoa, how about that?
Yeah, Brad finally destroyed that car.
Yeah, I came up on that one. He was kicking it as it's turned over in the ditch.
Burned it up. Burned up the motor on it.
There's a surprise.
Well, that wasn't what was going. Was that the same vehicle? Because he was one that turned one over in the ditch and was
like, "No, that was a Ford Capri."
I knew it was something small, but I mean, he was just kicking.
Didn't he finish off Suzanne's car when she moved out here?
He took that one too.
That was a Pontiac Ventura. That car would go like 150 miles an hour.
Everything on it was metal, like, you know.
When they made a car out of steel.
The body was steel. The bumpers were steel. The seats were made of metal. Everything in it was metal. And yet, Brad destroyed it.
Wow. For a while, I know he was driving around with a wooden beam he had bolted to the front of it instead of a bumper. Do you remember that?
It's probably for the best.
Yeah.
But that car, it also ended up in the graveyard of Brad's dreams.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, we got another commercial.
Oh.
Ooh. You want to do this one, Greg?
No, I saw the words. Read it, man.
Today's program is brought to you by Uncle Den's Olive Oil. Uncle Den has learned the secret of growing premium-grade olives right here in good old Southern Illinois. Why go to the dangerous Mideast for your olive oil when you can get it right here in the Midwest? Using a special blend of Lacino and Manzilia olives, lovingly picked and stomped by Dennis and his co-workers, you can be assured that when you're cooking with Uncle Den's olive oil, you're cooking with the best. And Denno has all the different grades of olive oil. Want the best of all? His extra virgin olive oil is made from olives that are carefully chaperoned at all times so you can be sure of their purity when making your favorite pasta dishes. And nothing goes to waste. The cheap, slutty olives are also used, being the primary ingredient in Uncle Den's USDA crude-grade olive oil that has an SAE 5W30 rating suitable for use in Fiats, Alfa Romeos, and low-performance Ferraris. So, for the finest Illinois olive oil that money can buy, hurry down to Uncle Den's market and make him an offer he can't refuse.
Or if you could grow an olive.
You know, I was thinking that when he was bringing that up.
In Illinois.
I don't know. What's the climate? I mean, Italy's...
You mean other than Dennis?
They raise them in California, so I mean, I don't know why.
They grow olives in California?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't see them much in the Midwest.
No, you don't.
They grow olives in California?
Yes, they do.
I guess I've not been to that farm yet.
Evidently
but I,
not.
But I mean, you know, when it comes to stomping olives, they just do a few of that for show. Mostly they're done with a press.
I'm sure
just like we do make cider with. So you could easily make olive oil with the cider press.
You could import the olives.
Import them? Heck. Grow them yourself.
I don't think you can get them through the spring.
But he can grow them in his greenhouse.
Well, there you go. Climate controlled.
We should grow olives. We should try growing olives.
I think we should.
Man, Illinois olive oil. Yeah.
Why haven't we done that yet?
We got to think about that.
Yeah. Maybe we get a big grant from the U.S. government, from the state of Illinois, to expand the olive industry in Illinois.
Which is none.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we'd be the first,
wouldn't we?
That's the best type of grant to write.
The first one.
Yeah, to go in there and convince the state of Illinois or whatever state you're in that some idiotic idea you've got has merit and convince them to give you $1 million to do it.
Right. Speaking of being in a different state,
I think you're going to say, speaking of being an idiot.
No, I was going to tell you about visiting with a cattle rancher over in Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
And I was riding around, and this guy's got this big cattle ranch. We're driving through the ranch in a truck and come up over a hill, and there's a dead cow laying out in the middle of the pasture, and there's buzzards all over it, eating it. Eating the carcass. You know, it's all nature's way, right? And he said, you see that over there? See that cow? Dead cow? See the buzzards eating? I know it doesn't bother you because you're a country boy. You've seen this kind of thing before, assuming that. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I watch buzzards eat stuff all the time.
That's my favorite sport. Don't have a TV.
We just go out and look for buzzards flying over and follow the kill.
Do you see that? There's a big raccoon in the road. Buzzards are going to show up pretty darn soon.
So, anyway, he stops the truck so we can watch these bastards eating this dead cow. He says, you know, if you see a dead cow out in a pasture like this, and there's no buzzards eating it, you know what's happened there? I said, I don't know, some kind of disease or something killed it. He said, no, it was struck by lightning. Buzzards won't eat a dead livestock that have been struck and killed by lightning.
How do they know?
How does who know, the farmer or the vulture?
The buzzards.
Yeah.
When they see something dead laying there, they come flying in and then pop down and go, nah, this don't smell right.
See, we've covered a lot of cows hit by lightning, but they have to be, you know, veterinary inspected. And I have to bring that up now, thinking about that.
Next time you go to your vet to get stitches.
Yeah. Or just tell the adjuster, well, we don't need that. They, you know, there's no buzzards around.
How do they know it's been struck by lightning?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If the buzzards aren't there.
Got a big burn mark on it someplace?
Okay, let's say, and this guy was, the same guy was telling me that, I said,
the same guy
how do you know this?
This same place you went hunting without
did
a gun.
No.
I said,
how do you know this? I said, how you know the cow was struck by lightning? He said, well.
Because the buzzards won't eat it.
I had three of them. Three cows that were standing under the tree that was struck by lightning.
Holding hands.
And all three cows were dead. The tree was split open, and I made a baseball bat out of the glowing center.
There you go. So did he ever offer an explanation why the buzzards wouldn't hit?
It's just nature's way.
Nature's way.
Yeah.
Nature's way.
It's just a phenomenon.
So I'm going to bring that up.
That's going to be in the category of a cow won't walk down steps, too. I've heard that.
I haven't heard a cow won't, but an elephant won't. An elephant won't step over anything that it can't touch the bottom of with its trunk.
Interesting.
And that's why at the zoo, they have like a little pit in front of it. They don't have a fence. They have
so
a
they
pit.
Won't step down
in won't their step trunk. Down yeah. anything they can't touch the bottom of with their trunk. That's a fact.
We'll check this out with the vultures and the lightning. That's an interesting fact to me. We'll check that out. See if the adjust. I just want to check with the adjuster and say, hey.
Just one of nature's curiosities, people.
Yeah.
Can just any veterinarian make that call, or do you have to be like licensed and rated?
No, just anybody can. I mean, common sense, like the guy said, if it's three around a tree and you had a storm the night
you'd need
night
a couple
before.
Of degrees. You need a degree in medicine and a degree in meteorology, wouldn't you?
Well, you're
Jackie Ringhausen.
That's what I was
going to
say. Yeah, we could have her.
We need
do
to
those.
Get her input on this whole lightning thing.
Yeah, that would be a great
Jackie
question.
Jackie could
for her.
Be the one they could call to
Isn't
say.
Is she a lightning specialist?
She's a lightning specialist.
There you go. We got to figure that out. We got
to
have
she
her
could
on.
Be the
There's
one
another guest.
Say,
we
look
need
at
to get
the
on.
Cow and say, yeah.
You
this
need to
has...
call her and say, have you ever heard of this situation?
Theory. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
We need to bring in the experts on
exactly.
this.
Exactly. We got ways to find things out.
Also, I kind of looked up a little bit about this on the
internet,
worldwide interweb, and
of course, it's true.
And they were commenting there that the same holds true for a drowned animal that predators won't
touch it.
That's such nonsense.
Won't
I
eat
don't,
up
believe,
a
I don't
animal.
Believe that for a second.
Now, here's something
some
I can tell
myself.
You know, they said that an alligator is the apex predator of North America.
An alligator is?
Yeah.
There ain't nothing that can whoop an alligator?
That it can eat a panther or any of the big cats that are in North America.
Well, North America python. But there's a lot in the Everglades.
So there's nothing that can kill an alligator? I thought the pythons can now, can't
Well,
they?
I mean, humans are the true apex predators. But beyond that, no.
Well, pythons have been introduced to the...
They're an invasive species, right. I think, is what you're looking for here, Greg.
Well, thank you
but what I'm
for
telling you
me.
Is
that
Gator's going along and he finds a cow floating in the water.
And it's bloated.
He's going to eat it. He's going to drag it down to his meat locker.
He's going to roll with it and then stuff it under a log.
Do you know
to
that
tenderize.
if an alligator cannot roll if its tail is incapacitated?
Well, you did a lot of research today on this. Amazing.
What's
did
that
you
time?
Know that there's, what? Oh, my God.
It's that
Greg
time.
Says it's quitting time.
Pretty close.
If Greg says it, it must be so.
Well, then, so long.
See you later.
Alligator from Greg Gator.
Later, Gator.
And Alligator Gator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestler has been brought to you by Uncle Dan's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for our cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that legal in hand, see you later from Greg Gator, Rick Gator, and Alligator. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network. Accept no substitutes.